Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSB Magazine. You're listening to a new Redefining Security podcast. Have you ever thought that we are selling cybersecurity insincerely, buying it indiscriminately, and deploying it ineffectively? Perhaps we are. So let's look at how we can organize a successful InfoSec program that integrates people, process, technology, and culture to drive growth and protect business value. Knowledge is power, now more than ever. HITRUST is a leading data protection standards development and certification organization that strives to safeguard sensitive information and manage information risk for global organizations across all industries and throughout the third-party supply chain. Learn more at HITRUSTAlliance.net.
Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at Imperva.com.
Marco.
Sean.
You know what's going on?
I don't know what's going on, but you know what? I would like a coffee.
That's the problem. The coffee is broken.
Oh, no. Come on.
It is. And I don't know how to fix it. So I guess we're going to close the shop today.
Ah, because you are in the business of making coffee. That's what it is. And you don't have a backup plan. Coffee. You don't have two machines. You don't have somebody you can call to fix it now. You're just shutting the store down.
I'm shutting the store down.
All right. Well, cool.
That's a good plan.
That's end of the podcast then.
That's right. And then I would say, unfortunately, if an organization, small or large, hasn't put a plan in place for resiliency, and we'll talk about what that means here in a second, that could actually be the reality where they have to shut things down for a while. And it could be a mechanical failure. It could be a digital failure. It could be a human failure. There are things that happen that we need to account for, and we need to have plans in place. Not everybody does an equal job in that. Not every organization is mature enough to have plans in place for the expanding digital elements they use to run their business. And that's what we're going to talk about today, Marco.
Yep, we're redefining security, but with a little bit of a step in away from it, you know, zooming out and understanding.
A step into it, but...
into it, in the coffee dog. Cup. Are we going to splash in it? No, I mean, just to, the thing that we were talking before we were starting, and we're going to go ahead and introduce our guest. It was the fact that, you know, resilience is, you needed it before even technology was so relevant, where every business now is a technology company, where everything is connected to the internet, and if something happened there, you know, complexity, it's great, but it can break in a lot of different places. So it's a different approach, but it's part of the business. And what you said, you know, it's the business of security, and you just can't be in business without thinking about that.
So it's time to get mechanical about our digital transformation. And I'm going to introduce our guests. We have George Platsis and Walter Crawford. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us for this conversation.
Sean and Mark, thanks for inviting us on. And if it's in relation to coffee resiliency, I can tell you from the family business, which was a restaurant, have an extra coffee machine on hand, and you have two vendors ready to replace one within 2 hours. So thank you.
There you go.
You can 86 the fish, but if you don't have the coffee at a restaurant, you're in trouble.
That's it. So I'm part of the proactive incident response and enterprise resiliency team at Booz Allen Hamilton. And I'd like to introduce my colleague, Walter Crawford.
Great. Thanks, George. I've got to admit that I recently just started drinking coffee for the first time. So I'm proud to be a part of the coffee crew here. My name is Walter Crawford. Resiliency really is in my lifeblood. My entire career has been spent helping companies think about this topic, whether it relates to cyber resiliency or IT resiliency or supply chain resiliency. So looking forward to delving more into these topics today.
Love it. And let's start at the beginning, because we were kind of joking a little bit here that we call technology when we think about digital technology, software and applications and services. But in reality, technology has been around us all our lives, and as part of the business, even in the form of a mechanical coffee machine that is probably now an IoT coffee machine sitting inside a coffee shop. What's the definition of enterprise resiliency, and has it changed over time given the changes in technology we're seeing? And maybe, I don't know who wants to take that. George, you want to take the first crack at that?
Sure. Thanks, Sean. I think the definition really depends on your departure point. Briefly, before we started in the green room, there's sort of these three buckets that you could treat resiliency. Do you have enterprise or business resiliency that's more along the lines of, hey, how do we keep our business going regardless of the hazard? And then there's another term that you'll see in the industry that's starting to gain traction, which is cyber resilience, which that could be a little bit more tactical in nature, which is the ability to recover from like a ransomware attack. And then the third one, it's tied more to technical resilience. This is more synonymous, I think you'll find, with disaster recovery. But even disaster recovery on its own within the industry, I think you'll find is going through a bit of a change, where especially with the cloud, does disaster recovery in the cloud look the same like it used to when you had data centers? So at least from my perspective is, when you are defining resiliency, make sure you're understanding your stakeholders and what they think it is, because you got sort of three little buckets right there. I lean towards the ability to keep your business going regardless of hazard. And I think that's probably the future of what resiliency will look like. And my esteemed colleague Walter may have differing views on this, but that's why we have these shows.
Yeah, well, I think it's mostly everything that you said. I think so key here in understanding resiliency is really just understanding the evolving attack surface for most companies. As most companies race to the digital age and migrate from having physical on-prem storage to now you're stored in the cloud via a host of different platforms and in infrastructure services, now you're really having to think about resiliency in the cloud. You're having to think about not just resiliency in the cloud, but as the recent Suez Canal crisis showed us, you're having to think about resiliency in your supply chain. And for many companies that have OT environments, you have to think about, what does resiliency look like on the shop floor where your products and services are made and then from there distributed? So it's an entire model for an enterprise that breaks down into these smaller buckets, but it really starts with having that overarching view of, again, what is enterprise resiliency? And it comes down to the ability to manage wide scale enterprise disabling events and get the business back online wherever that disabling event occurs.
And I want to get your perspective on this, because as you're both talking about what it is, the first thing that comes to mind for me is a single point of failure. You talked about the Suez Canal event. We were joking about, if I can't serve coffee today, I'm just going to close shop. That may be true for coffee shop, but not the restaurant, right? The restaurant can presumably still continue to operate. But to your point, if it's the coffee machine that's broken, can get repaired in an hour, a couple hours, a couple days, that's one thing. If it's the supply chain, you can't get coffee for weeks. You have to find a different supply chain. So your thoughts on the definition of enterprise resiliency in terms of how companies should look at this? Single point of failure, impact of the business, loss to the business. How should organizations approach looking at enterprise resiliency?
Sure. You know, it really is a holistic and yet an integrated approach at the same time. It's not a simple solution. It's not a simple solution because of how great the threat is. You know, we're seeing, you mentioned the Suez Canal event, and there are a number of different forces and externalities that are facing companies today. including ransomware being a major one as well. So when it comes down to how do enterprises approach resiliency, it really has to be a fusion team of teams structure where you integrate a lot of these key resiliency functions that may be disparate throughout the enterprise. So you have cybersecurity that's focused on one piece of resiliency. You have IT that's focused on another piece. And then you have your infrastructure teams that are focused on yet another piece, and then your supply chain teams. Today, resiliency has to be integrated. It has to be those disparate teams no longer functioning in silos, but thinking about how they can team together to bring one resiliency solution for the entire enterprise that manages a number of different threats and risks that relate to business disruption.
I completely agree with that. It's that fusion model that if you can find your dependencies and understand how your technology is working together, how your teams are working together, what you really want to avoid is you have one of the teams, like Walter mentioned, like you had your cybersecurity team not talking to your IT team during an incident. You actually want to have a lot of this pre-planning. For my emergency management days, there was a saying that said you want to exchange business cards before the boom. More of that needs to happen at the enterprise level. And back in the late 90s, mid 90s, the concept that, and this is more on the manufacturing side, but I believe it's quite applicable to what we're talking about today, was this just-in-time inventory management. I never really bought into that theory where to reduce your costs, your warehousing costs, you scrap all your inventory and basically you just get it in as you need it, goes through the supply chain, you manufacture it, and it's out. That's a great model, but it supposes one main thing, and that's that you will not suffer a disruption. If you can think about it, like if you're building cars and all that, if you're doing the entire just in time, if you have a disruption on your supply chain, on your manufacturing plant floor right now, your entire supply chain gets backed up where your rail cars, in fact, become your de facto warehousing. It's a little bit easier in the physical world, perhaps, but I think we're in that space right now that where we have focused so much on efficiency, having these abilities to work from everywhere that we can, seeing a blending between IT and OT environments. Again, all of these are business drivers to operate more efficiently, make more money. We've forgotten about that security / resilience, more importantly, the redundancy part of it. And I think that's what's increasing the general risk profile. And to add what Walter said, it's the attack surface is growing. So it's sort of like a double negative right here. You have and in this case, a double negative does not make a positive. If we're going by the math, you got your risk surface that's increasing, but you are also building inherent fragility into your system by connecting all these pieces.
Hey, you're just full of good news, George.
I try. I try.
Well, let's see if we can find a good news or maybe a different approach. So when we talk about complexity, the first thing that comes in mind is, company that are dealing with a lot of different business in within the business, right? And then you think about maturity. And when you talk about, medium-sized business or company that maybe they're not large corporation, they may think like, well, I don't have the resource for that. So my question is, does maturity equal to team size, or there should be a different approach of quality versus quantity? Can you be mature just by being smart?
I'm going to do a sort of a three bucket thing here as well. Your resiliency ability is a function of your resources, your organizational structure, and your environmental understanding. Let's put it like that. So if you don't have many resources, like you said, you're a smaller company, but you can be smart about how to use them and you have an organizational structure. So as Walter was saying, that you don't have those silos, they're broken down, and you have a good understanding of what's in your environment. So for example, you have a very up-to-date CMDB, you don't have all these stray endpoints and you don't know what's on your network, you could probably balance that out by utilizing your resources better. But if you're not aligned on those three, so like you could have the best resources in the world, but if you don't have that organizational structure, if your teams aren't talking to each other, if you're operating in those silos, or if you don't know what's on your network, then you could have all the resources in the world. Mark, you're saying you're talking about a medium-sized company right now. I'd venture to say that you could be a large company with incredible resources, but if you're still operating in silos and you don't know what's on your network, I still think you're going to fall into the trap of having a difficulty both reducing the risk profile and then again recovering from it.
Yeah, it makes sense, right?
And I'll just add on to that. I think I agree with everything that George said, but to your point around how do you think about resiliency when you have a company that is a multinational company and may have a number of subsidiaries that could be small to medium sized. That is a large challenge. And one of the biggest challenges that we do find is how do you actually lay out a real governance model that captures the subsidiary capabilities as well as the parent company capabilities. In those cases, really where we see there being value is in that larger company having the enterprise level capability, and then there being an interaction, an escalation model that's built between the subsidiary and the parent company so that the subsidiary understands at what level and what threshold they escalate an event up to the parent, and when they are able to leverage those resources. And then once that event is escalated, there's a very clear interaction model on how the two entities will work together in order to resolve the event.
And I'd like to get into the how we manage this. I want to stick first with just the kind of growing landscape of resiliency, meaning, or the risk profile in this case, more specific speaking to. So we talked about the coffee machine, it's a physical device, the technician comes in, fixes it, it's back online. If it's now an IoT device and it gets ransomed, that's likely not something that an organization was prepared for or thought about. So what are some misunderstandings of enterprise resiliency when we start to look at digital technologies where you can only know what you know and you don't know what you don't know? How do you get your head wrapped around all of that? And even still, there's the greater supply chain where they all have the same risk that they're dealing with that kind of feed back into your own whole business as well.
Yeah, I can start off. I think we first got to take a step back, and you mentioned ransomware there. We have to understand that when ransomware infects the organization, it moves laterally to encrypt everything in its path. So it's moving to encrypt all of those digital assets, all the data, all the platform systems that it can reach. Where we saw in the recent Colonial Pipeline incident is that the ransomware impacted first entered in through enterprise network, and it was looking to make its way to the OT, the OT network. That's a huge issue. So once we understand that, now we can start to talk about and think about, well, how do we really think about the risk and how do we think about the environment? This is where best practices around defense in depth and segmentation really come into play. This is where it's so important as well to really understand what are your assets and what are your crown jewels. And I actually think that's where most companies overlook the equation, is not really having that true understanding of what do you have within your environment? What's most critical to your business? And then from there, then you can start to think about how would you actually respond. But unless you really understand the assets, the systems, the applications, and those digitized devices and systems that you're referring to, unless you understand what's here today, you can't start beginning to manage how you would respond and recover in the future.
I absolutely agree with that. It's the known knowns, the unknown unknowns. If you don't have good visibility into what your network looks like, what your business processes are look like, who's holding the fire hose and who's painting the walls, you can only really get a true sense of this if you take the time and effort to do that assessment beforehand to actually gain that true picture of what do I look like? Where are my resource gaps? Where are my communication gaps? So that's sort of your first step. Then your second step is to start filling in those gaps. And then I would suggest to you, even after you fill in those gaps, if you don't start testing and training and building in that muscle memory, it's sort of like you will do it like the first time as well. Again, you can make huge investments into technology and even into your assessments, into your planning. But if you don't build this muscle memory into your operations, you're still going to find yourself in a hard spot. Like, how many times have you seen a professional athlete just walk onto the court or walk onto the field and just say, hey, this is my first time playing, and they end up being a champion at it? No, there's a lot of practice that goes behind it. That there's a lot of nuance in learning the techniques. That's no different than any enterprise right now, apart from the fact that there's so much more that everyone depends on. There's these interdependencies, there's these complexities, there's this reliance. Like, what I may think is unimportant to my operations could be something that Walter completely relies on. Unless we have that conversation, unless we have that assessment there, we won't be able to find that. But that may be that trigger, that one thread that could actually bring down the entire operation. There may be that one key person, for example, that's managing your notification boards. What's their backup? So that's why you go through the testing, you go through the assessment, and you mentioned the ransomware. You'll know at that point, hey, maybe my network is not segmented the way I want to. Maybe that lateral jump between IT to OT under my current configurations is pretty easy. Maybe there are certain parts of my network that do not have the protections that other parts of the network have. This is a great example if you're working with international companies that have different subsidiaries. Do they have different rules? Do they have different laws that may prevent different security controls in there? And if there are those security controls that are bound by law, regulation, or any type of statute, what does that mean for the rest of the network? These are the interdependencies and the complexities that you got to be looking for beforehand, because you don't want to be putting out that fire, even though sometimes we have to.
Well, let's talk about that, because as we know, you can never be 100% secure, right? I mean, you have to accept the fact that you overlook something, and as we said, the more complex the business is, and the easier it is to not catching everything.
You just have even to the floor of the IT room.
Yeah, no, you start removing everything. It's like the IT floor. Yeah, is this risky? Yeah, let's not do that anymore. Is this risky? Let's not do that anymore. And then you find yourself without a business because everything is risk related. So let's talk about that, the remediation. Remediation is part of resiliency because it means you have to be ready to do that. So how can you be ready in the best possible way when things go wrong?
This is actually my favorite topic and really where I focused all of most of my time is on thinking about the whole concept of readiness. I think when many organizations approach readiness, they approach it very linearly. So the cybersecurity team is thinking about what do we need to do to become ready for a ransomware attack? What does cyber need to do? And then the IT team is thinking about, the infrastructure teams are thinking about, what do we need to do if we have to recover during, after a major storm where our data center was impacted. And you've got the executive team that's also thinking about, how do we manage crisis incidents? And you have legal and corporate communications. All of these teams have their own crisis management and resiliency focused plans. But what you're lacking in the readiness equation, it is that fusion, it is that integration. It is everything around the connection behind the technology, people, and processes that are required in order to detect an incident, respond to an incident, and recover from an incident. All of those things coming together so that you have a true view of, okay, I have my technology in place. I have my continuous monitoring solutions in place from a cybersecurity perspective. I have my IT case management solutions in place so that we can keep track of incidents that are coming in. And then we have our backup systems and technology to help us recover. Having that overarching view of your technology stack on top of having integrated processes so that it's no longer just cyber thinking about how they're going to respond, but it's cyber thinking about how they're going to escalate to enterprise and work with enterprise to solve the technical remediation challenge, and then also the larger enterprise crisis management and resiliency challenge that weaves in the legals, the communications, and the executive functions all into the same picture, so that you're bringing one holistic response instead of piecemealing the response out to the enterprise. And you bring that view together with centralized plans. So having a centralized cyber incident response plan that references and that builds on top of your enterprise business continuity plan and your enterprise DR plans, all of those plans being harmonized together so that everybody's speaking the same languages at the same time and they understand how their role works with other roles. And then the third piece of this solution, it's the awareness and testing. So it's making sure that everybody understands what has been implemented and what process components exist, and then testing that so that you have a solid understanding of, is everybody on the right page across the enterprise? Now, you can do more focused technical tests. You're going to do tests within your DR org, you're going to do tests in your cyber org, but you've got to have that enterprise level test to really see, are we really ready as an enterprise to manage a wide scale business disruption? And I know George is going to have more comments on this too.
Yeah. And as you do that, George, I'd like to get your views on some of the common obstacles that organizations face as they try to do what Walter just described.
Sure. I want to pluck out on a comment that Walter said, which I absolutely loved, and that was that integrating the processes. So this is more of an organizational behavior type issue, and this is perhaps, Sean, leading into what you said on the obstacles. Assume for a moment an incident happens. Not only does everybody have a different task, but more importantly, they have a different interest. So when you start to integrate these processes, like Walter mentioned, is you get a better sense of what other people are thinking. You know, so for example, this podcast goes down. You know, we haven't had any pre-planning off it, but Marco's got to be doing one thing, Sean's got to be doing another thing. We each have, and we all have, at least in this case, a shared interest to get back online and get this call and get this podcast finished. If you are failing to understand the interests of all your other parties, you're going to start breaking down. So, for example, I may be someone on the IT side and I'm trying to recover from a technical perspective, completely unaware let's say Marco, who's part of the crisis communications team, is seeing social media just tearing apart our company. So he's coming to me and he's asking for answers. That's not really my problem. Marco has another problem. We have a shared interest here. So when you go to the model that Walter was suggesting, where you have centralized planning, you know when to escalate, you know when to tag people in, you start to alleviate some of these issues. Think about it. I think a good analogy is here is just playing on the gridiron. Everybody on the field, once the snap goes, has a specific task, a specific role. You know, someone's going to block to the left, someone's going to drop back, someone's going to run a fake route. But all of that, that is your fusion. That's coming together. Imagine now, for example, if you're a football fan, you just have everyone shows up on the field and it's like, hey, you got to score a touchdown. You can understand how that's going to get really messy and everyone's going to start tripping over themselves. And worse, you're going to let the defending team come and knock you over. So leading that into common obstacles, why isn't everybody on the same playbook? Well, exactly like Walter said, there is no common playbook. So get on that first common playbook. Get all your teams talking to each other. Understand not only what their tasks, their roles and responsibilities are, but what their interests are. Because then you can start to begin to empathize and say, okay, well, geez, I really got to help Marco out right now. I know he's got a problem going on one of the social media feeds. You know, he's up in the press. Let me see what sort of updates, what sort of information that I could give. And that may not be linear, George, to Marco. That may go through Walter, and then Walter makes that escalation decision and carries over. But you want to have all these pieces in place prior to. You said obstacles, Sean. I think there's a culture issue. I know that sounds like a soft issue. People may call it a fluff issue. But we have embedded so much this pro-efficiency model of business. Everything's at high speed. Everything just go, 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 go. We sort of forgot that redundancy side of this. I've used this story in the past in a few different sessions, but I think it's worth repeating. I was having a conversation with an individual a few years ago about smart cities and how to secure smart cities. And they kept on coming up with the phrase of efficient security, efficient security. And respectfully, I said, you cannot use those words in that fashion. Efficiency is go, go, go. Security is really a redundancy. That's slow down. So the most efficient way, since we were talking about smart cities and getting into apartment buildings and into different shops, it was like the most efficient way into your home is through a doorway. The door, which is there designed to protect you, is a redundancy. The lock is a redundancy. The fence is a redundancy. So it's easy in our minds, we got to protect our homes. But are we thinking about protecting our businesses, our enterprises? So the culture is a big issue. I think the other obstacle that we met, some of these things are very difficult to piece and put together. Going through and doing asset discovery, especially if you're a large organization, that's very timely. It could be costly. It's hard to keep up to date. We see just with patch management, that's a hard thing. If you don't have your patch management program in place. So there's a lot of, to go back to the restaurant reference that we kicked off, one thing that we were very proud of in our family, I can say, you know, the health inspectors in the city of Toronto said we were always one of the 10 cleanest places in the city. You got to put that legwork into it. It's hard, and that's an obstacle. Sometimes you just got to get on your knees, start scrubbing the floors and finding what's there and clean up the enterprise.
And I love this because, I mean, we often talk about in the business of security, well, how do you get everybody in tune with what's important? And we often say there's a disconnect between the CISO and the business. The CISO doesn't know how to talk business, and the business doesn't understand what the CISO is trying to accomplish. This seems like a very practical way to get the organization together to understand what the ultimate goal is for the company, for the business, for each team and their role in it, all marching toward the same thing, which then begs for me, Marco, kind of one of the biggest questions of all. You go for it.
You mean the magic formula? The
magic formula, yes.
So how you balance everything, right? I mean, I made the joke before, like, if this is risky, let's not do it. Why do you want to take a risk? Well, you want to do it because you want to innovate, you want to grow the business. And so where is that balance? If you had to, you know, based on your experience, to give this, of course, no pressure, I'm not asking for a real magic formula here, but, you know, the right approach, on your opinion, the right approach on the way to balance innovation, business, keep the door closed, but still allow traffic, right, to come in, to bring back the example of the door, and still be smart about being secure and resilient. So maybe a note for both of you just as a closing part here.
Walter jumped on the readiness as his passion. This business risk is kind of my passion. So, sir, Walter, I'm taking first crack at this one. I believe it's incumbent on security professionals right now, the CISO, for example, to take the time and effort. The CISO position has evolved. And I think if it does not continue to evolve, we may see a disappearance of the CISO position and being scooped up by people who do risk. I think it's incumbent on CISOs to take the time and the effort to learn what makes their business tick, not from a security perspective, but from an operational and business perspective. Learn that language, learn how to read balance sheets, learn how to read income statements, understand what the marketing strategies are, understand what the innovation strategies are. Because when you're talking to the rest of the C-suite, you need to talk their language. And I don't believe it would be unreasonable of me to say, I know I've experienced it in the past, where the information security type people can come in and sort of hijack the conversation with technical jargon. If you, and you know, you'll see people, glossy eyes are going to come over and they're going to shut themselves out. But if you take the time and effort to reposition and recalibrate your security needs from a business risk perspective, and that means talking in dollars and cents to say, okay, you know what, this is going to cost us X amount, and I think it's going to have this Y dollar value impact on innovation or operations. And in some cases, you may find out when you go deep, it's actually going to help improve business. It's going to make more money. It's going to run more efficiently. If you can understand the business drivers. And then after you do all of that, and again, to go back, when I mean more efficiently, I mean more productive. I used the wrong word there. I don't want to contradict myself from before. If you take all these pieces together, you will have a very, very good, true risk understanding of your organization. And then you can make the decision as your C-suite team and say, okay, this is the direction that we want to go in. But I really do believe it's incumbent on the CISOs. They need to build their relationship skills. They need to build their business skills. They need to build their communication skills. It's no longer just about information security. It's about business risk.
And it's about the value for the business, right?
Absolutely.
Yep. Walter, what about you?
Well, George has said a lot there, and everything he said really resonates. I have to say it comes down to one word, and that's speed. Absolute speed. It's how do we get better faster? Because the threat actors out there are moving at warp speed, and the global threat risk landscape is evolving every single day. And we've seen it in this last year. We've seen major, not only just ransomware events, not only just weather events, but we've seen pandemic events. We've seen geopolitical events that have completely shaken corporate entities. We've seen major supply chain incidents that happened over a year ago, but that are still impacting companies today. So it's a matter of how do you get better faster, and what is the path look like to get there? I think many organizations do get overwhelmed because they try and eat the entire Big Mac in one bite. But it really comes down to first understanding what's on that Big Mac first, what are the priorities, and then what's key for us to hit today and then hit tomorrow. So having that, really, it's a holistic roadmap, and being deliberate and intelligent about executing against that roadmap, that's where an organization is going to see the most value. And coming back to speed, really driving that across enterprises without silos and without the common challenges that most entities do face when they're integrating solutions across multiple teams. You know, one way that we recommend a lot of organizations really think about this is taking that role of what was the chief information security officer and dropping the information, saying chief security officer. Chief security officer, that encompasses more than just cyber. That now begins to encompass what is traditionally enterprise resiliency, so that now you have a holistic function and leadership structure within the enterprise that can support that broader scale resiliency without the silos of those resiliency capabilities living across multiple teams throughout the enterprise.
If I could just add one thing to Walter there, that speed thing, he said one word, I'm going to say one phrase. Staying agile, because you're always going to be behind. The threat actors, you know, they don't care. Mother Nature doesn't care. Staying agile enough that when the incident does come, you have the ability to bend when others are breaking.
Yep. Agile. And that's probably another topic of conversation, the whole agile in security management and risk management. But I think we are going to wrap it here. I think we've given a lot for folks to chew on, and hopefully they absorb it, perhaps even multiple times, not like the one Big Mac bite that you described earlier. And hopefully they have a coffee to wash it down as well. But I guess the final thought for me is that, I mean, I'm really seeing this as a way for organizations to not just have a resiliency plan, or say that disaster recovery plan, or BCP, business continuity plan, but this is a way for organizations to really understand what they're trying to accomplish as a business and pull the teams together to achieve that. Those financial objectives, those efficiency goals, the risk mitigation and risk management efforts to protect the revenue and the market share that they're building. And I mean, I've always had a hard time finding a way to operationalize resiliency, and I think you both described it extremely well here. So Walter and George, I want to thank you for joining us here on Redefining Security.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at imperva.com.
HITRUST is a leading data protection standards development and certification organization that strives to safeguard sensitive information and manage information risk for global organizations across all industries and throughout the third-party supply chain. Learn more at HITRUSTAlliance.net. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Redefining Security Podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.